Even for a second, it would attack. The wolf let loose a loud snarl. Peter glanced toward the tree. The wolf charged. Peter yelped, dropped his spear, and ran. Fortunately, even at six, Peter was as fleet and agile as a squirrel. He dashed across the clearing and leaped for the tree, catching a low branch, then swung up. There came a loud clack of teeth and a sharp tug that almost pulled him from the branch. Peter scampered up a few more limbs before daring a glance below. There, looking up at him, was the wolf, the raccoon tail dangling from its jaws. The wolf circled the tree a few times, then trotted over to the dead squirrel. Peter watched from his small, uncomfortable perch as the wolf devoured his dinner. When the wolf was finished, it curled up beneath the tree and went to sleep. As the long day slowly passed, Peter did his best to keep his legs from falling asleep and himself from falling out of the tree. By dusk, his whole body was numb, and he had resigned himself to a miserable night.
"Well, look there," called a gritty voice. "A Peter bird."
Both Peter and the wolf looked up. Gall appeared above them on a short ledge. Gall glanced at the wolf, what was left of the squirrel, then back up at Peter. He grinned.
"You feed old One Ear again, yuck."
Peter's face colored and he looked away. Gall laughed. Gall leaped down from the stones and strolled through the underbrush toward the clearing. The wolf, knowing the routine, simply gave Gall a disdainful look and loped off. Peter dropped from the tree, retrieved his spears, and slunk over to Gall. Gall held up a large rabbit.
"Gall will eat good tonight."
He nudged the remains of the squirrel with his toe.
"Look like Peter gets spider soup again, yuck."
Peter's shoulders slumped.
"Ah, Gall, come on."
"You want to eat good? You must hunt good."
Peter kicked at the scraps of squirrel fur and followed Gall glumly back to the cave. Peter dipped his spoon into the bowl full of dark, soupy muck. He raised it to eye level and looked from the clot of soggy spider legs over to the half-eaten rabbit in Gall's hand. The aroma of the roasted meat filled the entire cave. Gall licked the grease off his fingers, smacking loudly as he grumbled contentedly.
"Please?" Peter asked.
Gall shook his head.
"Just a few bites?"
"You know rule. You eat what you kill. You want rabbit, you kill own rabbit, or yuck."
"How am I supposed to do that with that stupid wolf following me?"
"You need kill wolf."
Peter was quiet for a long time.
"Gall, will you kill the wolf, please?"
Gall shook his head.
"Not hunting me."
Peter let out a sigh and sat his bowl down. He stood up, walked to the cave entrance, and looked out into the night. He could see the stars twinkling through the spring leaves. He thought of his mother. Sometimes he could close his eyes and actually smell her hair. He wondered what they were eating back in the great house, wondered why they'd left him for the beasts. He slapped one of the boots hanging across the entranceway, watched it swing, and wondered what the child had been like who had worn it, if that child had been left in the woods by its family.
"Gall?"
"A yuck."
"Whose shoes are these?"
"Little boys, little girls."
"Why do you have their shoes?"
"Must take them off before you can eat them."
"Eat them?"
Then he understood.
"The children?"
"A yuck."
"You eat children?"
Only when I can catch them.
Peter stared silently at the shoes. I don't think I would like to eat children.
You would like. Very tender. Very juicy. Much better than spider soup.
Where do children come from?
From village.
Where's the village?
No! No speak of village. You never go near village. Men are there. Men very bad. Very dangerous.
More dangerous than the wolf?
Yes. Very more dangerous.
Peter tapped the shoe again. It would be nice to have another kid around. Gall, if you catch another one, can I keep it? We could build a cage for it. Okay? Gall cocked his head at Peter.
Peter, you very strange. You stay away from village.
Peter came and sat back down next to the fire. He looked at the hind leg of the rabbit in Gall's bowl, then up at Gall, and smacked his lips.
No begging. Hate begging.
Peter stuck out his lower lip. Gall rolled his eyes and frowned.
Here,
he grunted.
Take it.
Gall slid the bowl over to Peter, watched the boy devour the rabbit leg. After a bit, a smile pricked at the corners of the moss man's mouth. He shook his head, then crawled beneath his furs and went to sleep. Peter finished the rabbit, lay back, enjoying the warmth of the meat in his belly. His eyes grew heavy. Sure would be nice to have another kid to play with, he thought. I could teach it to hunt, and... Another thought came to Peter. Why, together we could kill that mean old wolf. Peter found he was now wide awake. I bet I could catch one. Why, I know I could. Peter watched the men through a knot of berry bushes. He'd set off before daybreak in search of the village, venturing far south of Gaul's hill, farther than he had ever dared before, and had come across a road, and not long thereafter heard horses. He'd trailed them most of the morning, and they now stood drinking at a stream. Four men stretched their legs beside the horses, stout figures with thick braided mustaches and full growths of beard, brass rings in their ears, wearing leather breeches and wool-spun tunics. Three of them had great long swords strapped to broad, bronze-studded belts. The fourth man wore hides and carried a double-bladed axe. After living with Gall so long, he thought these men to be fearsome and giant. Peter understood why Gall was so afraid of them. There was also a wide-faced, solid woman with flaxen hair that ran down her chest in thick braids. She wore a long dress and, atop her broad hips, a wide belt adorned with swirling brass hoops. But it was the children that captivated Peter. He pushed the hood of his raccoon pelt back to get a better look. There were three of them, two boys about his age and a girl who looked a couple years younger. The boys wore only breeches and sandals, the girl a bright red dress. Peter watched mesmerized as they chased each other round and round, leaping over logs and skipping through the stream. One boy would tag the other and the chase would start anew. The little girl chased both of them, shouting for them to let her play until they finally got after her, their faces twisted up and their hands clutching the air like claws. The girl went screaming to her mother, leaving the two boys falling over themselves with laughter. Peter caught himself laughing along with them and had to cover his mouth. It looked like fun. They could play that game at Gaul's Hill, Peter thought, and now, more than ever, he wanted to catch one. He eyed the men, wondering how to grab a child with them so near, decided he needed to be closer,
and slipped up from tree to tree. One of the boys came bounding into the woods, sprang over a bush, ducked around the tree, and came face to face with Peter. Both boys were so surprised that neither knew what to do. The boy cocked his head to the side and gave Peter a queer look.
Are you a wood elf?
No,
I'm a Peter.
Well then, I'm a Edwin. Want to play?
Oh yes, indeed,
Peter thought, nodded, and gave the boy a broad grin. He started to grab the boy when the girl rounded the tree. She saw Peter's raccoon cape, the red and purple body paint, let out an ear-piercing shriek and took off.
Edwin, bellowed one of the men. Come back here!
Peter heard heavy boots tromping his way and ducked back into the woods. The man came around the tree and glared at the boy.
I told you to stay close.
The man scanned the trees.
There are wild things in these hills. Nasty boogies that live in holes. They steal little boys like you. And do you know what they do with them?
The boy shook his head.
They make stew out of their livers and shoes out of their hides. Now, come along. We've much ground to cover by dark.
Peter arrived at the village well after dark. His feet and legs ached, his stomach growled, but he ignored his body's grumblings. There was only one thing on his mind. The boy. He waited in the trees until the men finished putting away the beasts, until there was no one moving in the night but him. There were a dozen roundhouses similar to the one he'd been born in, plus a sprawling stable. These were built around a large square. Pigs grunted and chickens clucked in a pen somewhere. Peter slipped silently in among the structures, feeling exposed out among the buildings, sure he was being watched, that the huge brutish men were waiting for him around every corner. He pulled out his flint knife and ducked from shadow to shadow, sniffing, alert to the slightest sound. He wrinkled his nose. The village stank of beasts, sour sweat, and human waste. Peter wondered why anyone would want to live here instead of in the woods. He pushed up against the boy's house, sliding his back along the rough stone and sod wall, creeping up to a small round window. Dogs began barking from inside, and Peter's heart drummed in his chest. A deep, gruff voice quieted the dogs. Peter tried to peek in the window, but the heavy shutters were closed and locked tight. He plucked at the mud between the slats with his knife until a thin beam of light appeared. Peter peered in. The room looked for all the world as his home had when he was an infant. The large hearth, the kettles and pots, the spruce hanging from the rafters. The whole family was seated around the table, passing bowls of potatoes and cabbage, the boys giggling and carrying on. Peter inhaled, and the rich smell of smoked meat and baked bread brought memories of his own family flooding vividly back to him. An overwhelming longing hit him so hard that his legs gave way, and he slid down the wall and sat in the dirt. He hugged his legs as his eyes welled up. He shut them tight, and hot tears rolled down his cheeks.
Mama,
he whispered. Her laugh, her broad smile, her sweet smell, all of it felt so close, as though he could just walk into this house and she'd be there, would call him to her, would crush him against her warm bosom and sing him lullabies. Peter ground his teeth together and wiped angrily at his tears. He knew very well what would happen if he knocked on this door. A gale of laughter escaped through the window, not just the boys, but the whole family, all of them laughing together. Peter glared into the night. The laughter continued, pricking at him. He jabbed his knife into the dirt,
Who cares? He whispered through clenched teeth. Who wants to be stuck in a stupid, stinky house with mean, stupid grown-ups anyhow?
His stomach growled, and he stood up. He made his way toward the stable, seeking out the hen house.
Maybe I'll burn their house down. Then they'll know how it is to be out in the cold.
He found the hen house, silently slid over the latch, and slipped in. A few hens raised their heads, clucked, and eyed him suspiciously. Peter waited for them to settle, then helped himself to all the eggs he could find. He spied several burlap sacks heaped in the corner, picked one up, and measured it against himself.
About right.
He left the coop, prowled the stable until he found some rope and a bludgeon. He held the short, stout piece of wood out, tested its weight. He hoped he wouldn't need it, but brought it along anyway, just in case, because he'd never stolen a child before and thought a good, stout stick might just be in order. He hid the stash behind a giant oak tree that stood on the edge of a field. He climbed up into the oak to sleep, but sleep didn't come easy.
Tomorrow, he thought, going to catch me a Edwin.
Peter awoke to the rooster's crow. He sat up, inhaled the brisk morning air, and wondered if the boy was about yet. He hopped down from the tree. The sun was just peeping over the rise, and a fine mist covered the freshly turned earth in the nearby fields. He relieved himself, then crouched next to the oak, watching, waiting. He didn't have a plan, not yet, not beyond getting Edwin to come behind the tree so that he could put him in that sack. Men, women, and older children came out and began to go about their day. Soon the air was alive with the clank of the smith's hammer, livestock being fed, the calls and grunts of men at field work, but still no sign of the boy. Peter began to fidget. He didn't like being so close to the village, too aware of the many men about. Finally, he heard spirited shouts and caught sight of Edwin and the other boy. Peter watched them head across the square and into the stables. They reappeared a moment later, carrying a bucket in each hand, then disappeared into a line of trees at the bottom of a slope. Peter checked for any nearby men, then dashed from haystack to haystack, crossing the field to the trees. He found them filling their buckets in a small brook. He slid behind a thicket of blackberry bushes. The boys climbed carefully up the slope, watching their step as they lugged the pails of water. Peter waited until they were almost upon him, then leaped out.
Hi!
The boys screamed, turned to run, and crashed into each other. Both boys, their pails, and the water spilled back down the slope. Peter fell to his knees, laughing so hard he had to clutch his belly. The two boys exchanged terrified looks. Then Edwin's face broke into a grin.
Hey! It's him! He cried.
The other boy looked perplexed.
It's him! Edwin repeated. The wood elf! See, Otho, I told you.
Edwin punched the other boy on the shoulder.
Now who's the idiot?
Otho squinted at Peter.
Are you really a wood elf?
His name's Peter, Edwin said.
Show him your ears, Peter.
Peter pushed back his raccoon mask.
See?
Well, damn, Otho said.
A wood elf. A real wood elf.
He reached out and touched Peter, as though making sure he was real.
What are you doing here?
Let's play, Peter said.
Play? Otho responded. We can't. We got all sorts of stupid chores to do.
Not every day you get to play with a wood elf, Edwin said.
Well, yeah, that's true. Otho agreed. But if we don't get the hogs watered,
Papa will whip us. I know lots of wood elf games, Peter said. They're a lot more fun than carrying buckets of water about.
A sly grin lit up his face.
We could play for a little while, over behind the haystacks, near that big tree, where no one can see us.
The boys returned Peter's sly grin, because Peter's grin was a most contagious thing. Edwin nudged Otho.
Wood elf games? I've never played wood elf games.
Well, Otho said, maybe for just a little while.
Great, Peter said. Follow me, and remember, we can't be seen.
He took off in a crouch. The two boys followed him up the path, mimicking his every move. They reached the haystacks, stopped. Peter peered around, making sure the way was clear.
Hey, Peter, Edwin called. Watch this.
The boys scrambled to the top of the haystack. Peter started to warn him to get down before someone saw him when the boy leaped across to another haystack. Edwin poked his head back over the stack.
Bet you can't do that.
Peter frowned.
Bet I can, he said,
and leaped from one haystack to the next. And for the next hour, they jumped haystacks, raced, played tag and hide and seek. Peter forgot about the sack, the rope and bludgeon, even about the men. He was having too much fun. Soon, they'd lost their shirts, Peter only in his loincloth, their torsos glistening in the hot morning sun, covered from head to toe in mud, leaves, straw, and big, fat grins. They were mighty berserkers now, and a particularly tall haystack behind the stable was a terrible dragon. In a ferocious attack, Peter leaped upon the haystack and tried to climb to its summit. The stack tilted, Peter yelped, and the whole heap toppled over, pinning him beneath a blanket of soggy hay. The boys ran up and began to dig Peter out. When they uncovered his face, Peter spat out a mouthful of straw, began to cough, then laughed. He choked, spat out more straw, then laughed some more. Soon they were all laughing so hard that they rolled on their backs, helpless.
Hey,
Peter hollered between bouts of giggling.
Hey, get me out of here. There you are,
came a woman's sharp, angry shout. The laughter died. Peter's heart leaped into his throat as he suddenly remembered just where he was.
What nonsense is this? I've been...
She stopped in mid-sentence, her mouth agape.
Who? What?
She let out a scream. Peter twisted around to look at her, and she pointed at him with one fat, trembling finger and screamed again.
Goblin! Goblin!
An older bald man and a wiry, pockmarked youth stuck their heads out from the stable. They saw Peter and came in at a run. The youth carried a pitchfork. Peter yanked his arms out from the hay and dug frantically to free his legs. The two boys looked from their mother to Peter.
No, Mama, Edwin cried. He's not a goblin. He's a...
Peter jerked one leg free and kicked and twisted to free the other.
Get away from it,
the woman screeched.
Edwin, Otho, hear me, get away from it now!
When the boys didn't move, she ran up and snatched them back. The pockmarked youth raced up, raised the pitchfork, and drove it right for Peter's face. Peter jerked his head away, but not fast enough. One of the prongs sliced down the side of his scalp. He felt a red-hot slash of pain and let out a howl. In a wide-eyed fit of panic, he kicked his remaining leg free and scrambled up. He almost made his feet when someone grabbed his arm and jerked him off the ground. The bald man slammed a huge fist into the side of Peter's face.
Peter's head exploded with white light and pain. His legs buckled, but before he could fall, the man punched him again, a hard jab in the ribs, sending the boy tumbling backward. Peter hit the ground in a heap, and everything went blurry.
"Kill it!"
the woman shouted. Peter tried to suck in a breath, but his mouth was full of something wet and warm. He coughed violently, spraying the ground with his own blood. The side of his face had gone numb. Through tears and blood, he saw a blurry figure moving toward him.
"Now, kill it! Quick!"
"I got it," the youth cried. Peter cleared his eyes in time to see the youth coming at him with the pitchfork. Dizzy and slow, Peter made it to his feet. The youth jabbed him. Peter tried to twist out of the way, but the prongs raked across his side, leaving behind three flesh-deep gashes. The bald man made a grab. Peter ducked and ran, stumbling at first, but once he got his feet under him, ran like the wind into the forest. Once within the trees, he collapsed to his knees, clutching his side, his face clenched tight with pain. He let out a loud, hitching sob, then spat repeatedly, trying to clear his mouth of blood. They were yelling and pointing at him from the field. Several more men and women had come around the stable. They weren't following him, just standing and pointing excitedly into the woods. He could see their faces, could see the revulsion, the fear, the hatred. Other men came up then. Men with thick, braided beards, carrying great, long swords. Peter ran. Peter's lungs burned. He'd been running most of the day, and still he dared not stop. He glanced back, eyes wide with terror. He could hear them, their dogs, and the hard clumps of the horse's hooves. They were closing in. Peter spotted Gaul's Hill far ahead through a break in the trees, and the horrible realization that there was no safety there, that there was no safety anywhere, hit him. Gaul couldn't stop these huge men with their terrible swords and axes. The men would kill Gaul. Peter cut down a new path, headed toward the cliffs, leading the men away from Gaul's Hill, hoping the horses at least wouldn't be able to follow him up the steep ledges. Peter made the cliffs and stopped, listening for the men as he tried to catch his breath. He didn't hear them. A touch of hope lifted Peter's spirits. Maybe they'd given up. Maybe he wouldn't die today after all. Then he saw the smoke, and his chest tightened.
"Gaul,"
he whispered. Peter ran, ignoring the stabbing pain in his side, the throbbing in his head as he sprinted as fast as he could back to Gaul's Hill. He topped the rise and froze. Smoke billowed out from Gaul's burrow, and there, dangling from the great oak, hung Gaul. The rope was strapped about his chest, pinning his arms to his side. His feet twitched only inches above the ground. The huge men surrounded him, some on horses, some on foot, all with swords and axes in hand. The moss man was charred, and smoke drifted from his red, raw skin. He had no less than a dozen arrows in him, and yet still he kicked and spat. The dogs bit at him, tearing open the flesh on his legs as the men brayed with laughter. Peter's knees gave way, and he stumbled against a fallen tree, his fingers digging into the rotting bark as he slid to the ground. He wanted to stop them, do anything to stop them, but couldn't move. Couldn't do more than stare on in utter horror. A huge fellow with a thick black beard and long knife walked up to Gaul. Gaul stared at the blade with wide, terrified eyes. The bearded man grabbed Gaul by the hair and jerked his head back. He first cut off Gaul's left ear, then the right. As the moss man struggled, the men laughed and the dogs ran around in tight circles, howling. The man jabbed the blade into the moss man's stomach. Gaul screamed and twitched spastically as the man sawed his gullet open. The man slid the blade into a loop of intestine and pulled it partially out of the wound, then whistled to the dogs. The dogs snatched the loop and pulled Gaul's intestines out onto the dirt in wet, rolling coils, tugging and fighting over them as the moss man wailed. Peter watched, stone-faced, unable to move or cry, to hardly even blink. He watched. He missed nothing. After too long, much too long, Gaul stopped wailing. His head sagged forward, and he was still. When the men left, Peter stood and walked down the hill. He didn't cry. He didn't feel the cuts in his side, the gash across his head, not even the ground beneath his feet. He did not feel. He moved slowly, methodically. He found Gaul's bone-handled knife and cut the moss man down. To Peter's surprise, Gaul opened his eyes.
"Be brave, Peter Bird,"
Gaul rasped.
"Kill the wolf."
And that was it. The moss man's eyes glazed over. Peter slipped Gaul's knife into his belt, gathered up his spears and headed north, away from the village. He had no clear thought of where he was going, only that he was going away from the village, away from the men. It wasn't long before Peter heard the wolf trailing him. Peter stopped in a clearing, turned, and waited. The one-eared wolf appeared. Its lips curled up like it was laughing at the boy, like it knew it had him. Peter didn't flinch, didn't hesitate. He dropped the light spear and hefted the stout one to shoulder level. He slipped the bone-handled knife into his other hand, locked eyes with the wolf, and came at the beast in a dead run. The wolf looked confused. Peter's eyes flared and he let loose a terrible howl. The wolf fell back. Peter threw the spear. The wolf hunkered to avoid the spear, and when it did, Peter leaped forward and drove Gaul's knife deep into its side. The wolf let out a yelp and took off, but after only a few strides, it began to weave and stagger, its hindquarters collapsing, its breath coming out in a harsh, wet wheeze. Peter snatched up his spear and followed the wolf. The wolf stopped, unable to do anything but stand and watch the boy coming to kill it, panting as blood dripped from its lips. Peter's eyes were hard, without hate nor pity, the eyes of a predator. He thrust the spear into the wolf's heart. The wolf thrashed, twitched, then lay still. Peter stared at the wolf for a long time. His eyes began to well. A single tear ran down his bruised, swollen cheek. Then another, and another. Peter fell to his knees before the wolf and began to sob. The tears were for Gaul, but they were also for himself. A six-year-old boy without a mother or a friend, scared, hated, and with nowhere to go. A scream snatched the child thief from his thoughts. One of the little kids, a boy, lay on the ground in front of the monkey bars. Two older boys stood over him laughing, not teenagers, just bigger boys, maybe 11 or 12. The small boy climbed back to his feet and tried to wipe the mud from the front of his t-shirt. Two chubby girls of about 7 or 8 ran up and stood on either side of him, braids sprouting from their heads.
"Leave him alone,"
one of the girls said. She jutted out her chin and planted her hands firmly on her hips. Her friend followed suit.
The handful of children in the playground stopped playing and began to gather around.
You want me to kick your ass too? The big boy said and shoved the girl, knocking her to her knees.
His pal chuckled.
Don't you push her,
the little boy shouted, his muddy hands balled into fists, his face full of fear and hate. Peter shook his head, knowing that soon this little boy would be just as mean as these bigger kids, because meanness had an ugly way of spreading.
What you gonna do about it?
We was here first,
the second girl shouted as she pulled her friend back up.
Well, we're here now, the big kid said. So get the fuck out of here, lest you want me to kick all your stupid little asses.
When none of them moved, the big kid stepped forward.
You think I'm fucking around? I said...
He saw Peter standing next to the little boy. A confused expression crossed his face, as though unsure just where Peter had come from. He glanced back at his pal, but his friend looked just as surprised. The child thief pulled his hood back and locked his golden eyes on the two big kids, the same eyes that had backed down a full-grown wolf. He didn't say a word, just stared at them. The big kid seemed to deflate.
Come on,
the kid said to his pal.
Playgrounds are for candy asses.
They left, casting anxious looks back over their shoulders as they went.
Hey, kid,
the little girl said.
You got funny ears.
Peter grinned at her and wiggled his ears. The kids all burst out laughing.
You want to play with us? Asked the boy.
I do, Peter said. I most certainly do.
His eyes gleamed devilishly.
But not today. Today, I have to find a friend.
Chapter 7. Sikiyu. Nick sat on the floor with his back firmly against the wall. His aching head felt like it would never stop ringing. He touched his swollen lip and winced. At this point, he felt fairly confident that no one was going to eat him, at least not this morning. He rested his head against the stoneworks and watched the kids go about their madness. Half-naked kids darted about in all directions, pushing and yelling, but somehow out of the chaos, fires were started, torches were lit, bowls were brought out of cupboards, and soon the air smelled of soot and smoke. Nick tried to count the kids, but they moved around too much. He guessed around 20 altogether and was amazed at the ruckus they could make. Soft morning light flickered along the stone and dirt floor. Nick could see a sparse canopy of limbs through the few breaks in the roof. He scanned the chamber. It was a bit smaller than a basketball court. His eyes returned over and over to the hanging bodies in the far corner. They'd looked so real in the fog, but now, in the light, it was plain to see that they were just straw dummies. Why there should be straw dummies hanging from the rafters was a mystery, but at this point, they were the least of his concerns. The place was a mess, cages and tarps strewn all along one wall, clothes piled up in and on top of old barrels, candy bar wrappers, crumbled cigarette boxes and butts among the straw and leaves, old blackened chewing gum worn into the stones. The only thing that was neat were the weapons, glistening with fresh oil and hung in nice rows, along with various types of leather armor, helmets, and pads. Cooking smells caught Nick's attention, a nutty cinnamon aroma. Nick was surprised when his stomach began to growl. How his stomach could think of food after all that had happened was beyond him. He watched them fill their bowls up with a soupy goop. Was that gruel? Nick wasn't even sure what gruel was, much less what it looked like, but he bet it looked a lot like that stuff. One by one, the kids plopped down onto the benches on either side of a long wooden table and began to eat. Nick still had a hard time believing what he was seeing.
wild-haired savages slurping, smacking, yelling, and laughing with large gobs of food in their mouths, several using their hands instead of the big wooden spoons. All the while, the little blue people flew about trying to snatch stray berries and nuts. Another growl came from Nick's stomach. He really wanted a bowl of whatever it was they were eating, but there was no way he was going to beg to be fed, not after the way they'd treated him. A girl walked purposely over to him. She had the wide cheekbones and a strong jawline of a Native American Indian. Her body was lean and sinewy. At first glance, she appeared to be around his age, but as she neared, he noted the hard set of her face, especially the eyes. They didn't look like the eyes of a child, and it became tougher to guess. Her copper-colored skin was dirty and dotted with scars, leaving no doubt she'd seen her fair share of trouble. Her long black hair was captured in twin braids that ran down her back. Two black wings were threaded through a broad, beaded headband. The feathers swept downward from the sides of her head, the tips touching the tops of each shoulder, giving her a noble bearing. She carried a bowl and a wooden spoon. She stopped in front of Nick and stared down at him. Her eyes were gold like Peter's, but large and intense. Nick dropped his gaze and stared at the floor.
"I brought you food," she said, and held the bowl out to him. The nutty smell tugged at Nick, but he ignored her. "Do not be a child. Eat," she said.
Her words were stilted, spaced. Nick could tell English wasn't her native tongue. Nick said nothing. She gave him a moment longer, then turned to leave.
"Wait!"
Nick forced the word out. She looked at him, her eyes hard, uncompromising. Nick held his hand out for the bowl. She continued to stare at him.
"Please,"
Nick said through clenched teeth. She handed him the bowl. Nick gave the goop a stir. It looked like chunky oatmeal. He scooped a small clump onto the wooden spoon and gave it a nibble. He noticed a touch of bitter beneath the sweet, but it was pretty good. Careful of his busted lip, Nick began to eat. The gruel was warm and felt good going down. As a matter of fact, it warmed up his whole body. She sat down, cross-legged, in front of him.
"Your name is Nick?"
Nick nodded.
"My name is Sekiu."
There was a long pause.
"You should know you did well with the Red Devil. Most kids are too frightened to fight back. I believe there is a warrior in your heart. You just need skills. We will begin training today."
Nick stopped eating.
"Training?"
"To become a warrior, to become clan, to become a devil."
"What?"
"You must learn to fight, to defend yourself and your clan."
She said this so matter-of-factly that for a moment, Nick thought he might be the crazy one.
"Clan? You mean that bunch of assholes?"
Nick jabbed his thumb toward the kids.
"You think I want to join their little jerk-off club?"
The kids had pulled swords and spears down from the walls and were practicing basic moves, leaps, thrusts, stances, and so on, while others paired off for light sparring. In spite of himself, Nick was fascinated by their speed and agility as they knocked each other back and forth across the floor.
How can they move like that?
"Peter has brought you here to offer you a chance," Sekiu said sternly. "To become clan, to become a child of fairy. Do you have any idea what that means? It is a chance at eternal youth, to live wild and free for 1,000 years.
Nick stared at Sekiu.
"What are you talking about? And where is Peter?
Where the hell did that bastard go?
Sakiyu's eyes narrowed. Choose your words carefully, Nick. There are those here that would kill you for calling Peter such. Judging by her face, Nick was pretty sure she was one of them. Nick let out a frustrated sigh. Peter is gone to search out more children for the clan, she said.
What?
Nick could hardly find the words.
You mean to kidnap more kids?
She gave him a sharp look.
Talk to them,
Sakiyu pointed around the chamber at the kids.
Ask them their story. Peter finds the lost, the left behind, the abused. Is that not why you are here? Did Peter not save you?
Peter tricked me.
What would have happened last night had Peter not shown up? Where were you going to go? Eat. Sleep.
Again, she pointed to the other kids.
If what they say is true, then how long before you were selling drugs, or as they would put it, before some pimp made you his boy? Or would you have returned home? Do you wish to go back home now?
Home, Nick thought. He couldn't go home. Not ever. But that didn't mean he wanted to be held captive on some island full of monsters either.
Just where is here? Just what kind of place is this? Here is the Isle of Avalon, the sanctuary of the Shi, and the realm of the Queen Modron, the Lady of the Lakes. Here is the refuge for the last of Earth's enchanted creatures.
Sakiyu's eyes locked on his, her voice becoming more and more intense.
Here is Devilwood, the domain of devil kind, the children of the wolf mask. We are the lost, the wild, the untamable. We are the...
Okay, okay, Nick interrupted, rolling his eyes, realizing he was getting nowhere. Look, you can't make me play this stupid game, you got that? I want no part of it. She laughed, a cutting, cold sound.
Fool, no one will bother to make you. You still do not understand. This is not a gift. It is something you must earn. Peter has brought you here at great peril to himself. What you do from here is up to you. If you wish to leave, then leave.
I'm not a prisoner. I can just walk out of here.
If that is what you really wish.
Nick laughed and shook his head.
Are you kidding me? I'm so out of here.
She glared at him.
That is the problem with you runaways. You believe you can always run from your troubles.
I didn't run away, Nick snapped. Now she was the one shaking her head.
Well, I did, but it wasn't like that. Look, you don't know anything about me.
But she looked like she did know, like she'd seen it all too many times before.
One cannot be forced to become a devil, a child of fairy. It is a hard enough thing if you want it with all your heart. You must take on the challenge of your own free will, or the spirit of the forest will never bind with you.
Yeah, okay, whatever. Can you just tell me how I get out of here already? She gave him a long, hard look, then pointed toward a large round door at the far end of the chamber. Nick sat the bowl down and got to his feet. He wiped his hands on his pants, flipped his bangs from his face, and headed for the round door. As he trekked across the hall, one by one, the kids stopped what they were doing and watched him. A black boy trotted up alongside of him. The kid was a few inches shorter than Nick and missing his left hand just above the wrist. He appeared younger than the others, maybe as young as 10, hard to tell for certain.
He had an honest, plain face and kindly eyes. His hair was pulled back into two braids with long blue ribbons woven into their ends.
"You leaving already?"
he asked in a slight southern drawl. Nick kept walking.
"Here."
The boy tried to hand Nick the spear he was carrying. Nick pushed it away.
"Kid, it'd be murder to send you out there without a weapon of some sorts. Now you need to listen up. You come across some of them bargest, you be sure not to show no fear. Got that? They sense you're afraid, then they'll get after you for sure."
Nick came to the door and stopped. "Now hear me," the boy continued.
"I'm not playing with you. You're gonna be a-wanting this."
He shoved the spear in Nick's hands. Nick took the spear and looked at it, positively mortified.
"Oh yeah, and if the flesh eaters track you down, you just drop that there spear and get running. Because,"
he laughed,
"they'll just shove the damn thing right up your ass."
Nick set his hand on the door slat, but didn't slide it over.
"Here, let me help you with that," somebody said. This voice was deeper than that of the one-handed kid.
Nick turned and found himself looking up into the stern eyes of the tall devil boy.
"My name's Redbone. Sorry we won't have the chance to get to know each other better."
He smiled coldly and yanked the bolt over, pulling the thick round door inward. The wooden hinges whined as the door swung open. Nick immediately noticed the gouged marks on the outside of the door, long, deep slashes running down the splintered wood.
"Don't mind those," Redbone said. "The Barghest like to sharpen their claws there, that's all."
It was gray, musty. Nick could just make out the shapes of a few gnarled stumps and trees, but the rest of the forest fell away into a wall of shifting mist. From somewhere far out, he heard a single howl. Nick recognized that call, would never forget it as long as he lived. It was the same howl that the shadowy, hunched creatures, the ones with the orange eyes, had made the night Peter brought him in from the mist. Nick found himself incapable of moving. Redbone put a hand on his back, easing him forward, and started to push the door shut behind him.
"Wait!"
Nick cried, slapping a hand on the door. He turned around. They were all staring at him.
"Yes?"
Redbone asked, a smirk pushing at the corner of his mouth. Nick's lips began to quiver. He started to say something, but was too mad, too afraid he would start crying. Redbone stared at him.
"Maybe you'd like to stay and make some friends? You just might live longer with some friends watching your back."
Chapter 8. Nathan. The child thief watched the park lamps hum to life one by one. Night had come early beneath the incessant drizzle. The deep shadows from the towering tenement buildings squeezed together, and there was no longer a soul in sight. Peter refused to admit that another day was lost. He couldn't afford another day, not with the captain on the prowl in Avalon. He pushed through the row of buildings, on to another, then another. He spotted two figures dodging lamplights and darting from shadow to shadow. Even across the wide courtyard, Peter could tell that these kids were runaways. Could almost smell it. A grin snuck across his face. The game was on. The child thief trailed them into the stairwell of a large building, slipping beneath the stairs. The stairwell smelled of piss and vomit, mold and stale garbage. He leaned back into the shadows, trying not to inhale through his nose as the two boys conversed in low, anxious tones. Now that they were in the light, Peter could see they had to be brothers, the older one maybe 15 or 16, the younger one no more than 12. The older boy had a scrape on his forehead, his left eye was swollen,
the knees of his jeans torn and bloody. Someone had beaten him.
What we gonna do?
The younger boy asked. We just gonna tell him.
No way!
Nathan, what else we supposed to do?
You think he's gonna believe us?
Nathan said, the anxiety in his voice rising along with the volume.
That was his dope. He's gonna blame us or think maybe we stole it.
It's the same story, Peter thought. Drugs. These days it was always the drugs. But Peter had seen too much, knew too well that mankind didn't need an excuse to be cruel and murder one another. If it wasn't drugs, then there was always something else.
Shh,
the bigger boy said, glancing furtively up the stairwell. He threw an arm around Nathan.
Chill now. Your big bro got it covered. I'm tight with Henry. He'll work with us. Hell, if he wants to get paid back, he'll have to. Now, won't he?
The bigger boy was trying to sound cocky, cool, like he had it all together, but Peter knew he was just as scared as his younger brother, maybe more so.
We can just leave, Nathan said. Get out of here, to another town, maybe.
Don't you understand? We got nothing, man. Not hardly a damn dollar.
A tremor was creeping into the older boy's voice.
You know anybody gonna take us in around here? Especially if Henry's after us? Or do you want to go back and live with the old man?
The younger boy shook his head hard.
No, I'm never going back there. Never.
Look, I got us into this. I'm gonna get us out. Now you just wait here.
Nathan grabbed his bigger brother's arm.
No, Tony. Don't leave me.
His voice cracked. His eyes welled up.
Please don't go up there. Man, please. Please don't go up there.
Stop blubbering, Tony said sternly. You start with that baby shit and I'm gonna leave you for good. You want that?
The younger boy's face became terrified.
No,
he said, and wiped his eyes on his sleeves.
I'm sorry. I'll be cool, I promise.
I know you'll be cool, 'cause you're the coolio.
He rubbed the younger boy's head, and a big smile lit Nathan's face.
Just wait here, the bigger boy said. He ain't gonna kill me for one fuck-up. I'll be back in a minute, and everything will be fine.
He held up his fist.
Give it up.
Nathan tapped his knuckles against his brother's fist.
Hang tight, Coolio,
the older boy said, and headed up the stairs. Peter listened to the rain trickling down the gutters as Nathan paced in and out of the stairwell doorway. It seemed a long time before they heard anything. Then a loud shout echoed down the stairwell. Nathan started for the stairs.
You don't want to do that,
Peter said, coming out of the shadows. The boy jumped back.
Who are you?
A friend.
Nathan squinted at him. Then another shout came from above, followed by several angry voices. The boy forgot about Peter and dashed up the stairs. He made it only one flight up before a scream came from outside, a long, horrified shriek. Then a sickening thud in the courtyard. Nathan froze. Peter grimaced, knowing what that thud meant. He could see by the boy's face that he did too.
Tony?
The boy leaped down the entire bottom flight of stairs and shot out of the stairwell. Peter followed slowly behind. The boy lay sprawled upon the sidewalk. One leg bent awkwardly behind him, his eyes wide, blinking, lips moving but no words coming out. His head lolled over and Peter saw that the back of his skull was crushed inward, his hair wet with blood.
Tony!
Nathan screamed and ran to his brother. Peter glanced up the face of the building. There, looking down from the sixth-floor balcony, was a man and four older teens. The man pointed at Nathan, said something, and all four of the teens sprinted to the stairwell.
"We need to go," Peter said.
The boy ignored him.
"Tony! Tony, man! Oh, fuck, no! Tony!"
Several people stuck their heads out their doors, glanced over the balcony, then went quickly back in. Peter heard the teenagers' feet drumming down the stairwell. They'd be down in another moment. Peter placed a hand on the boy's shoulder.
"Hey, they're coming. We need to go."
Nathan looked up at Peter, his lips trembling.
"They killed him!"
A sob tore loose from the back of his throat.
"They killed my brother!"
"They're coming for you now. We need to leave."
The boy looked up to the balcony, saw the man, heard the boys shouting in the stairwell. Peter watched the fear leave the boy's eyes, replaced with hatred. The boy jabbed his hand into his brother's coat pocket and pulled out a knife. He popped open the blade and stood up.
"You want to kill them?" Peter asked.
The boy didn't answer. He didn't need to. His eyes said it all. Peter grinned.
"Good. Let's kill them."
Peter darted back beneath the overhang, ducking behind the open stairwell door. He slipped his long knife from his jacket and pressed his back to the wall. All four teens rushed from the stairwell out into the yard, saw Nathan, and stopped. They looked at the small knife trembling in his hand and began to laugh. One of them, a short, muscular kid with long sideburns, stepped forward.
"You already dead, motherfucker. You just too stupid to know it."
He pulled a gun from his jacket and leveled it sideways at Nathan.
"Well, what you waiting for, badass?"
"Let's see what..."
A blur shot past the teen.